sunshine. Give me a do. Give me something simple and true. All I need is sunshine and a cool, refreshing mountain dew. So give me my good friends. Give me a do.
Grab some friends and an ice cold Mountain Dew today.
Mountain Dew.
This is News Talk.
Hi everyone, welcome to the TY Takeover. Today's show will contain a range of topics over the hour. We will discuss TY, summer festivals and sport. Firstly, we will hear from Kira, who will be talking about transition year and if it's a waste of time. We took to the streets of Dublin to see what people had to say.
So did you or do you know anyone who did TY?
I did TY, yeah.
Okay. So what was your experience like with TY?
It was grand, I guess. I was in Desh school, so there wasn't much opportunity to do anything really. But from what I remember, like, it was a couple of years ago, but it was grand, like, honestly.
So was there anything that you took away from it that you still think about today?
Oh, the work experience definitely was a very, like, a big major helper. I did an office job thingy kind of thing, and I'm actually still there to this day. Like, it's actually very good. Like, you get many opportunities, and if it comes, like, just take it, honestly. Like,
did you or do you know anyone who did TY?
Yeah, I do. People, okay. I skipped it though.
Your school offer TY?
Yeah, they do.
And what is their program like?
It's full of activities and lots of fun for all the students that choose to do it.
Looking at it from your perspective, do you think there's anything that could be added to it?
I don't really think so, because from what I've heard from my friends that do it, it's jam-packed full of fun for them, so I think it's well enough for them.
Did you or do you know anyone who did TY?
I did TY.
What was your experience with it?
I really enjoyed it. It was kind of like a nice break between doing exams and then having to prepare for another set of exams. Gave some experience. Like, it was good for like socialising and like making new friends and stuff like that, like kind of getting out of my comfort zone a bit, yeah.
What do you wish you had learned in TY?
I wish I did the driving. I didn't do that, so that's something I wish I'd learned.
To make a suggestion of what you think is important for outside of school to learn in TY.
Well, outside of school, well, I'm glad they're doing the driving. That's terrific. Yeah. I'm glad they're doing that. And, of course, the cooking. But let the boys learn how to cook as well as the girls.
My school does that. So did you or did anyone you know do transition year?
Yeah, I did.
Okay. So what was your experience like with it?
I thought it was fun. It's kind of a bit of a dodgy year, but it's kind of a break in between all the work.
Was there anything you took away from the experience that you'd still like think about today?
Probably like your real friends, because everyone else moves on, so you've got to make new friends. So yeah.
Is there anything you wish you'd learned in school in TY?
Probably not to relax so much, because then once you go into fifth and sixth year, you forget everything and then you're too lazy to actually get back into work.
Did you or does anyone you know do TY?
Yes. No, my daughter did and my son did.
Okay. What was her experience like with it?
Hers wasn't great because hers was COVID, so she felt that was a bit of a waste of time. And then when my son done it, his was on the back of COVID, and it was a brand new school, so they were the first fourth year to do it, so he felt it was a waste of time.
Is there anything you wish they had learned in TY?
Bit of cooking, a bit of ironing. Yeah. I think TY is great, but I think it's what you put into it yourself.
Like, the school should introduce things to distract them from the phones and get them into hobbies, maybe?
Oh,
for
yeah,
TY?
Definitely, yeah.
We are now joined by Ailish Davenport, who runs Learn Local Ireland, a cooking programme that provides accessible workshops for schools. She is here to give us her opinion on effective use of time in TY.
What made you want to start this programme, and did you see or hear something that sparked the idea?
So, I had been in the hospitality industry for 17 years, and I noticed that nobody was cooking at home anymore. And that was true, no one's fault. It was just society, and that was the way that it was going. So when I was on maternity leave, I was looking for things to do to keep myself occupied, and I thought, right, I need to come up with something that's skills focused, that's going to give skills back to people that need to know how to cook.
Right, and did you think it was they were not knowing how to cook because they weren't learning at a younger age, or because people weren't just trying?
It's because society changed. So through the generations, maybe two generations ago, 15, 20 years ago, there would have been maybe one parent at home, or there would have been a family member at home providing meals for children or for people coming home from work. That's changed now because there's two people going out to work. And in some cases, where there's more than two adults living in the house, there's more people going out to work.
Yeah.
And there's options in workplaces for them. So there's no need to cook at home. And it's also, you have to look at children when it comes to creches and childcare providers. They're providing meals for children now. So kids aren't seeing it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So from what you've seen doing like your TY courses or the courses in school in general, are you like shocked that they don't have like basic life skills, or do you like, do you see anything that shocks you?
I'm not surprised. That's for sure. I'm not surprised. The one thing that really shocks me or stands out is that some kids just think mashed potatoes are mashed potatoes, that they don't know the process involved, or they don't know where it comes from. And it's the same with an egg. Some kids will know what a fried egg might look like, or they might know what a scrambled egg might look like, but they don't actually see an egg in its shell.
Really?
And that's really sad. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
God, yeah. That's mad.
I know. Yeah.
So what do you think is the most important thing for students to learn in TY?
I think skills focused, any activity that I suppose focuses on a life skill, and that can be with food, or it can be with finances, how to manage money, or it could be how to manage your taxes, that kind of thing. So those are all really, really important life skills that I don't think are delivered or taught enough of in TY, and I think there's a real gap there.
Yeah.
For those things to be picked up on. Mm. And then it also, like, it might turn a light on in some child. And it doesn't have to be in TY. It could be in fifth year or sixth year. When they take what they've learned in TY, it doesn't matter what it is, be it food, media, finance, anything. Yeah. And it might just give them a better pathway into what they want to choose to do in college, when it comes to their college choices, instead of just hoping for the best and putting things on a whim on a CAO form. They might actually have a genuine interest in something because they've done it in TY.
Yeah, like we did... We went out onto Grafton Street and we were interviewing people there.
Very good.
A woman said that like her granddaughter would always be on her phone, so they should like try get them to do more hobbies in school to try introduce them to them. So maybe cooking could be that.
That's literally it. Yeah.
So other than cooking, what would you like to see implemented into all the TY courses?
Definitely something on financial literacy.
Mm.
Because I know myself that's what I would have loved to have a little bit more of in school, to be able to budget a little bit better. Like, I know we've got your business studies, but not everybody will choose business studies.
Yeah.
And not everybody's interested. But I think a solid foundation for everybody would be really, really beneficial.
Yeah, so like managing your taxes and things like that.
Yeah, how to budget, how to, when your wage comes in after your part-time job on the weekend, if you're in fifth year or sixth year, okay, well, what way am I going to split this so that I can A, have fun with my friends, B, save something, and C, put something to get something by for a day that I might need it.
Yeah.
Now that kind of thing is really, really important.
Yeah, because say in business for junior cert, we did do a bit like that, but they just sort of taught us how to do them numbers and stuff, but you never actually learned like how it's important in real life.
The practical side of things. Like, it's okay, like, and don't get me wrong, I think academics is really, really important, but really to hone in on practicalities for everybody, no matter their interest or no matter what their academic level is in a classroom, to be able to deliver that information on a base level for everyone would be really, really beneficial.
Yeah. And so do you want your kids to participate in TY when they get to that stage, and why?
If they wanted to. I am an early school leaver.
Oh, right, okay.
Okay, so I think it's really important to give kids choice, but to also support them in their choices.
Yeah.
So if they do go ahead and they want to do transition year, that would be amazing. But equally, if they did want to skip on and do fifth year, I need to be ready to be able to support them, because it's a different challenge as soon as they go into fifth year.
Yeah.
I think transition year is a brilliant year to do, but is it for everybody? Not.
Yeah. So would you maybe encourage them?
I would try to encourage them to do it.
So if students skip TY and they go in straight into fifth year, do you think they should be given opportunities to learn the life skills?
Absolutely. I really think any stage pre-college is amazing to learn these kind of things.
Mm.
Because you're going to college and you may be living in a dorm with maybe four or five others, you mightn't have access to a kitchen. So you might only have a toasty maker or an air fryer or a slow cooker, you know, and to be able to utilise that, if we can get kids to learn the skills, the fundamental skills of cookery, they can do anything once they get to that stage.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter whether they have great facilities or very, very limited facilities, but they're going to have the skills to be able to diversify for themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think when we were on Grafton Street as well, another person mentioned how nutrition would be very important, that, like, not everyone does home ec, because I know you'd learn it in home ec, but I don't do home ec, so, see, I can't really tell the difference between protein and carbohydrates.
Yeah, it's really, really important. Yeah. And in my cooking programme, or in the culinary skills programme that I deliver, I go a little bit on that side, and I teach the basic function of your nutrient.
Mm-hmm.
So what does protein do? It repairs.
Yeah.
What does a carbohydrate do? It gives us energy. You know, just those little basic things, and in a way that everybody can understand.
Yeah.
And I don't delve too deep. I really hone in on the skill.
Yeah.
Because I think once you have the skill, you can do anything.
Mm, that's true, yeah. Like, when we went on Grafton Street as well, another person was saying how she went to a deaf school when she was in TY, so they weren't given as much opportunities as other schools, so she thought it was a bit of a waste of time doing TY.
So I have done... So this programme is a six-week programme. And in the school that I did it, just after Christmas, it was a deaf school.
Mm.
And when I first pitched it to the school, they were like, our kids don't contribute to the TY program. You know the way in some schools, I know in your school you would have to pay so much to contribute, and that will cover all your different bits and bobs. They don't have that opportunity in this school because they just don't have it. Mm. And that's the bottom line. So I had got a little bit of funding and I was like, just let me in and just give me the kids that want to do it. So I got eight kids.
Mm-hmm.
And the feedback was incredible. One guy, bless him, never did anything at home. He'd make toast or he'd make a sandwich for himself, or, and that would be it. And he's like, I can't believe I actually like it. That's what he said.
Mm.
He was like, I can't believe I actually enjoyed that, you know, which was lovely to hear.
Yeah.
You know, and then a couple of the girls were like, it's real easy and it's practical. It's things that we're going to do at home. Like now, not even when they're in college, they're like, I'll go home and I'll make that tomorrow. You know, it's that kind of stuff that we're doing. There's no books, there's no tests, there's no, you know, I'm not a teacher.
Yeah.
But I'm a chef that wants to teach. Yeah. And hopefully we'll keep going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we talked to six people on Grafton Street, and two of them said that they think cooking should be put into TY courses. So I think it is something that's very important. So, if people want more information about where they can get your course, where can they go to?
They can go to learn.local, IRL, on Instagram, or they can contact me on my Gmail email, which is info.learnlocal@gmail.com.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Ciara.
We are now going to take a quick break, but coming up next, we are going to take a closer look at the summer festivals in Ireland.
Welcome back to TY Takeover here on News Talk. I'm Luke, joined by Matilda and Olivia today to talk about 2024 summer festivals, Longitude and Electric Picnic, and if they're worth their money. We took the streets of Dublin and asked for the views of the people.
I have tickets for Electric Picnic.
Do you think the cost of the tickets are worth the lineup? Because you're paying like 200 for Longitude, 300 for Electric Picnic.
Yeah, I think in terms of the Electric Picnic lineup, it's definitely gone down in comparison to last year. We were all shocked in how kind of crap it was. In terms of the lineup, in terms of the headliners, definitely, they're not the best anyway. But I think the price is kind of, in comparison to other English and European festivals, it's an alright price at the moment in general, but for the lineup this year, I don't think it's worth it.
Do you think the standard of Longitude or Electric Picnic has decreased over the past few years, since like 2019, 2018?
100%. Longitude's gone down in one day. It's gone down to 2 days, has it? Yeah. So definitely Electric Picnics, the lineup's kind of up and down. Longitude, I wouldn't really look at, but I know Electric Picnic definitely has gone down in terms of headliners.
If you were to have any artist at the lineup, if you could design a lineup, who would you pick?
I think Fontaine CC, definitely, I'd say number one, should be on it. There's a lot of other Irish artists. There's a lot of lack of female artists, especially in the lineup. There's only, what, the headliners are Ray and Kylie Minogue. Definitely, I think there should be more female headliners.
Like, there's a few names I didn't recognise on the lineup. The only people I'd listen to is like 21 Savage and like maybe a few of the DJs.
And do you think the standard of Longitude and Electric Picnic has decreased over the years, like compared like the Longitude lineup from 2019 to now? Like, what would you say?
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely decreased. Like, even compared to last year, like, it's not as good.
And if you had like a dream lineup, like if you could pick anyone to be like at Longitude or Electric Picnic, who would you choose?
Probably like get Travis Scott back on it. Like, Chris Stussy, that DJ. Just more known names, like, yeah.
Have you bought tickets to go to Longitude or Electric Picnic this year?
No, I actually haven't. I had a weird time at Electric Picnic last year, so I didn't buy tickets, but I really want to get them.
Do you think the cost of the tickets are like worth the lineup?
I mean, 300 is a lot for Electric Picnic, but the experience is amazing. To be honest, I think the lineup is the least of your worries if you're there.
Yeah.
You know. Oh yeah, no, back when I was in school, the lineup of Longitude was crazy. And then also I used to go to Electric Picnic when I was younger. Yeah. And I literally, like, Lana Del Rey was there, everyone, all these big things, and now, you know, it's gone so downhill, even in comparison to like festivals in England.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
Have you bought tickets to go to Longitude or Electric Picnic this year?
No, I actually haven't. I had a weird time at Electric Picnic last year, so I didn't buy tickets, but I really want to get them.
Do you think the cost of the tickets are like worth the lineup?
I mean, 300 is a lot for Electric Picnic, but the experience is amazing. To be honest, I think the lineup is the least of your worries if you're there.
Yeah.
You know. Oh yeah, no, back when I was in school, the lineup of Longitude was crazy. And then also, I used to go to Electric Picnic when I was younger.
Yeah.
And I literally, like, Lana Del Rey was there, everyone, all these big things. And now, you know, it's gone so downhill, even in comparison to, like, festivals in England.
Yeah.
It's completely different.
Have you bought tickets to either Longitude or Electric Picnic?
I haven't for Longitude, but I'm actually playing at a smaller stage at EP. So,
oh, that's so cool.
Yeah, I haven't got a ticket, but I'm going to be there. So
that's so cool. Do you think the cost of the ticket is worth what you're going to see every year?
Yeah, I think I went last year and like I had the best time. So I think, you know, you're seeing a lot of people for the same price you could see like one person in the Three Arena. And it's also like an experience. I think the camping and the whole thing is just really good fun. Yeah. But I personally love the lineup. I know it's controversial. But yeah, I think each year kind of depends. I suppose it's probably hard for them to organise it all.
Yeah. What's been your favourite like Longitude lineup or Electric Picnic lineup from over the years?
Last year, Billie Eilish for me was just the love of my life.
And if you had to pick like a dream lineup for either of the festivals, what would you choose? Like, who would you want to be there?
Oh, I think Kylie Minogue's actually really going to be really good. I know people don't agree, but I think like younger generation, they're going to realise how good she is. I also think the likes of Sabrina Carpenter, she's really in at the moment, and Olivia Rodrigo, I know she's in the Three Arena at the moment, but yeah, kind of like more modern stuff. But the Script last year were really good at EP as well. Yeah, a mix of everything's good.
Today we have Marty Guilfoyle here to answer some of our questions. Do you think there's been a shift in the change of music genres in the recent years?
Yeah, 100%. I think since, you know, TikTok blew up over the last, say, 3 or 4 years, 100%. I think at the time before TikTok was big, I found that dance music was like properly at the top of its game. People seemed to love it along with pop music. But now I find like R&B music and hip hop, if you want to kind of branch them under the urban kind of bracket, they've gotten so much bigger over the last couple of years. And I think you can really see that in the festival lineups, like Longitude over the last couple of years have kind of gone urban heavy, especially on the Sunday. And you're seeing it across the board for sure. So as far as the music goes, the genre goes, the festivals are definitely a lot more diverse. But I mean, that just means it's great. There's something for everybody. And I guess if the likes of urban music is coming back, that's not a bad thing. When I was growing up in the '90s, it was absolutely huge. So it's great to see it make a little bit of a comeback.
Do you think the quality of the lineups has decreased over the last couple of years or increased?
So that's a really good question. I saw the Electric Picnic lineup announcement there last week, and I saw that a lot of people were commenting negatively on it. Now, from a music point of view, you've got one of the biggest DJs of all time playing at it. You've got one of the biggest pop artists of all time playing at it, like Kylie Minogue. She's been around for over 3 decades. You've got Ray, who's had a serious couple of years, especially the last year. And then you've got a bunch of, you know, other artists in the lineup as well that have been really top of their game for the last year. So I think when it comes to festival lineups, especially in Ireland, because we don't have that many festivals and people are kind of buying tickets before they even know the lineup, there's always going to be that little bit of a disappointment. I guess when you look at Longitude, you can say it absolutely has. I'm not really kind of referring to the quality of the music, but more so, it used to be a 3-day festival and now it's a 2. This year, we're not getting Independence, which was massive in Cork over the last geez, I don't even know how many years, but it's been a staple for the festival circuit for the last so many years. So it's kind of hard to know, but a lot of people as well are, they're not spending their money on festival tickets like they used to as well. So if the money isn't coming in, you know, you can't really get some of the artists to perform on it that you'd obviously like to see, and you compare it to the likes of Coachella and Creamfields and stuff. But I don't think the quality of music has decreased at all when it comes to these festivals, but your notice will get a little bit smaller, especially by the C sessions as well, and the interest in just traveling to Donegal from outside has kind of decreased a little bit. So I guess that's why, you know, when you only get so much money in, you can only put so much money out if you want to make a profit.
What's your dream lineup? Who would you like to see at Longitude?
My dream lineup would probably look nothing like it is right now. I'd love to have David Guetta at it. I'd love to have Hannah Lang at it. I'm a big fan of her. So I'm looking forward to seeing her at Electric Picnic for sure. I'm loving Marlon Hofstadt at the moment. He calls himself Daddy Trance. My lineup would be solely dance music. I mean, another kind of avenue that it goes, given the fact that I'm 32 now, I'd probably go back and do a whole festival as well if I could, and get to see the likes of the Killers and Kings of Leon and stuff all at one festival as well. And I find that now this summer, all the promoters are kind of branching into both live music, dance music, and urban. But if I was to have a festival, it'd be, yeah, David Guetta, Marlon Hofstadt, Hannah Lang. That's such a tough question. Oh my God. I would probably throw Ray in as well, because I love her. Sabrina Carpenter, absolutely throw her in just to hear Espresso live. A little bit of Doja Cat as well. Maybe Megan Thee Stallion, just to really mix it up a little bit, spice it up a little bit. But yeah, that's kind of who I'd have off the top of my head. That's a really good question. That caught me off guard now.
Do you enjoy Electric Picnic and Longitude as like a whole?
Yes, I absolutely do. I play at both of them every single year, and I'm very lucky that I get, you know, paid to work at these festivals and then enjoy the days around them. As far as like 3-day festivals go, I wouldn't be kind of into them anymore. That was something I definitely did more in my early to mid 20s. But to get to spend a day at them, yeah, I absolutely love it. And people kind of give out about Longitude being a little bit too young and stuff. Like, there are areas for people if they want to go that are over 21s. Electric Picnic is obviously a family friendly festival too. So, I mean, my favorite part of festivals these days tends to be the food. So once I get to do my set and have a bit of fun, then I love exploring, kind of eating all the food as well, and then going to see other acts. So as far as it goes for now, my interest and enjoyment of these festivals is still the same as it was 12 to 14 years ago. I still love them.
How many times have you performed at Longitude or Electric Picnic, and which year was your favorite?
Which year? Okay, wow. Electric Picnic has been every year since 2017, I want to say. Longitude, every year since 2017 as well, I think. Now that I think about it, could be 2018, I'm not too sure. So the last 7 years, and then obviously we were missing them for a year because of that kind of COVID thing that happened. That's a bit of a blur for everybody. The year that was my favorite, Longitude, my favorite year, was probably the first year that I played it. It was absolutely massive. Then that was when it was a 3-day festival, and I loved it. So that would have been 2017 or 2018. And then as far as Electric Picnic goes, the last year was cool. It was really, really cool. I was on the same time for half my set as Niall Horan, so I didn't get to see him, but thankfully people came to my set after Niall Horan, which was good. Fred Again was absolutely incredible as well. Like, I really enjoyed the lineup last year. I did find out that this year there's half an hour of my set that's clashing with Calvin Harris, so I'm not expecting to have too many people there, but hopefully when Calvin is done, people will come to my set. But I'm a little bit disappointed that I'm not going to get to see Calvin, because I'll be getting ready to go on stage myself. But I would probably pick this year's one, because I'm excited to see Kylie Minogue on Sunday as well, which I know probably for a group of students your age, you're probably wondering who she is and why someone would look forward to seeing her, but I'm so excited to see her.
Who has been your favorite person to perform or work with?
My favorite person to perform or work with. We had Dua Lipa on the show there back in 2017, 2018. She was lovely, really, really nice. So she would probably be top of the list, just because people who are like kind of A-list celebrities and people like Dua Lipa, you don't expect them to be as nice as they are. Like, she was so, so nice, so down to earth. And couldn't have asked for a better interview with someone at that that level of fame, and it was that nice. From a music point of view, there's a guy called Lewis Thompson. He works behind the scenes on a lot of your favorite songs that you wouldn't know if you went into the credits and some of the songs that you're listening to now. He would be like a producer kind of tucked away in the credits, and he was so nice to work with too. So from a radio point of view, I'm going to go with Dua Lipa, and then with a music point of view, his name is Lewis Thompson. I'll go with those two for sure.
And Marty, just the final question here. Like Longitude tickets now, Electric Picnic tickets have gotten like very significantly high in prices. So we're just wondering, do you think they're like worth the money? Like Longitude now is probably around €200 and Electric Picnic is pushing 300. So what do you think of those two prices for the people you're coming to see as well?
Yeah, that is expensive. So you're trying to get people to come see a lineup that's a little bit smaller, and you're essentially paying more money. I guess it's that's just the world we're in at the moment. Things are that little bit more expensive. I mean, Longitude is also clashing the same weekend as Taylor Swift. And I know people are kind of giving out about the price of accommodation around that too. So it just seems to be like this running thing across the board that you want to go on a day out or a night out to a festival or a nightclub, it's going to cost you an absolute fortune. But look, to me, if you have the money, I'll always say like that money is always, you know, put good towards making memories with your friends and peers and colleagues and stuff. I always find that if you have a bit of extra cash, you know, if you're choosing what to spend it on, whether it's a really fancy bag or a nice watch or whatever you're into, like I'd always pick it on nights out and festivals and stuff. I just think that those kind of memories that you make onto those kind of things are just completely invaluable. So while I know it's expensive, I'm going to say it absolutely is the worth the money for sure.
Thanks, Marty. Coming up next, we'll talk about gender equality in sport.
Hello, my name is Linas. I'm joined by Kian. Welcome back to TY Takeover. In this segment, we will be discussing how gender inequality in sport has changed over the years. Today, we're joined by Kathleen McNamee, producer of Off the Ball and presenter on the Koi Gig podcast, to discuss the representation of women in sports. But first, this is what people of Dublin think has changed in sport.
When's the last time you saw women's sport represented in the news, and how often would you see it?
I definitely think you'd see it one like less than men's sport. I think it was like the ladies' soccer was the last time I saw it, but definitely in terms of GAA, which I'd be more into, you definitely see less of it. Definitely in the news, definitely in the RTE at least.
And when would the last time you'd watched a women's sports game be?
I went to one of the Dublin's ladies' matches last year. I can't remember what it was. It was one of the league games anyway. No, I definitely say I don't go to them as much as I probably should be in terms of, because it's the exact same sport. Like, it was probably one of the Dublin matches last year.
Do you believe women's sports are underrepresented in media?
Oh, 100%. Again, in terms of in relation to Irish, into men's sports, GAA especially, there's a lack of funding, a lack of representation in general.
If women's sport was more accessible, would you be more likely to be interested in it?
Yeah, I think it's, in terms of GAA, I think it's accessible, but they've started to get the numbers. There's no reason people shouldn't be going. I think it's, again, it's underrepresentation in the news and news about matches, and yeah, no, there should be more.
And do you think women's sports representation has improved over the years? If so, in what way?
I think there has been, in terms of, you've already, the news especially, there's just been more recognition of achievements in Irish sport, in the Olympics, in soccer, in the World Cup. I think there's been more representation in the news and just been more talk about it than there has been in the last, when I was younger anyway. Yeah, definitely just in news in general, there's been more of a talk about it.
According to Irish Sports Monitor, only 7% of girls aged 15 to 16 get the recommended amount of physical activity. Why do you think this is?
I'd say there's a stigma around it growing up. I know, just in general, I'd say there's a stigma about getting older and kind of moving away from sports. A trend of kind of online that there's less people wanting to continue sports into an older age.
When's the last time you saw women's sports represented in news, and how often would you see it?
I did see it in the paper the other day, actually. I don't really follow sport, but I did notice that there was... My son suddenly got into sports, and he was asking about women's sports, and then we looked through the sports section together in The Guardian, and there was some pages given over to it there.
When's the last time you've watched a women's sports game?
Never.
Do you believe women's sports are underrepresented in media?
I think that, well, it depends what media you're looking at. It seems to me that some media outlets are really trying their best and doing quite a good job, but possibly in the tabloids that isn't the case. I never look at them.
If women's sports was more accessible, would you be more likely to be interested in it?
No, I don't like sports, and I am unlikely to ever watch it.
Do you think that women's sports representation has improved over the years? If so, in what way?
It definitely has, because when I was young, there was absolutely no representation whatsoever, and I wouldn't have known any single name of any woman, apart from in tennis. But since then, obviously, it's great to see people my kids' age knowing lots of female sports players' names.
According to Irish Sports Monitor, only 7% of girls aged 15 to 16 get the recommended amount of physical activity. Why do you think this is?
I think it's because, unfortunately, girls go into a kind of cycle of trying to fit in and be what the media sort of suggests they be, which is a kind of pretty weak character. So everything aimed at young girls is about weakness. Like even the fact that vapes are targeting them and have ridiculous names like Lost Mary, which are about weakness. I have a 16-year-old daughter and I see it in action just as it happened with me. It's a time when you try to fit in instead of kind of letting yourself free to do something physical.
When was the last time you saw women's sports represented in the news?
Represented on the news? I haven't seen it lately.
When was the last time you've watched a women's sports game?
I watched Ireland and England 2 or 3 weeks ago. England beat them 2-0.
Do you believe women's sports are underrepresented in the media?
They were, but they've moved forward now and they're getting there. A lot more emphasis needs to be put on it.
If women's sport was more accessible, would you be more likely to be interested in watching it?
I would watch it on the television now. I'm not saying I would go to one of the matches, but I would watch it on the television, especially the Irish games.
Do you think the women's sports representation has improved over the years?
Definitely.
In what way?
There's more publicity surrounding it now, and there's a bigger audience for the girls' soccer teams. The GAA is probably lagging a bit behind, but the girls' soccer team has much more promotion now than they ever had.
When's the last time you saw women's sports represented in the news, and how often would you see it?
I wouldn't watch the news much, but probably the last time was the Football World Cup in Spain one.
When's the last time you've watched a women's sports game?
I watched the rugby, the Six Nations, the last day. I forget when it was, but I watched that one, yeah.
If women's sport was more accessible, would you be more likely to be interested in it?
Yeah, if there's a place to watch it, I'd watch it, yeah.
Do you think that women's sports representation has improved over the years? If so, in what way?
Yeah, I mean, you got Kate Taylor and all, they named themselves, so yeah.
According to Irish Sports Monitor, only 7% of girls aged 15 to 16 years old get the recommended amount of physical activity. Why do you think this is?
It's not promoted enough.
We're joined here now by Kathleen McNamee of Off the Ball. Do you believe that professional sportswomen are paid too little in comparison to men?
I think it depends on the sport. In certain areas, that's definitely the case. I think if you look at how the women's rugby team has been treated over the last few years, you could say that they don't get the same amount of money. But then for the women's soccer team, they get equal pay to the men's team in Ireland. So I think it depends on the sport. It depends on how well funded the sport is and also the respect that's given to the women in that sport.
Due to COVID, all sports teams were temporarily closed in 2020. Do you believe that this has stunted the growth of women's sports?
I think so. I think we see it a lot in access to facilities and access to the funding that we mentioned just there a bit ago. I think when sport was coming back, there was a eagerness to get men's sport back a lot quicker because it was seen as more commercially viable, which actually isn't the case. Anyone who puts a bit of money behind women's sport is reaping massive rewards from it. So it was definitely an unfortunate interlude because I think it did stop a lot of the progress that had been made, but we're starting to gather a bit more ground now.
Do you believe that women's sports are underrepresented in media?
Definitely. 100%. And we have a lot of figures that show that. There was a campaign run called 20 by 20, which basically said by 2020, they want to increase the coverage of women's sport across the board by 20%. It was a really, really smart campaign. And I think it did a lot to increase how sports represented in Irish media. But I think since then, because there hasn't been that sort of thing forcing people to think about it and think about representing women in sport, we have fallen backwards on it a little bit. And I know it's something we work hard in Off the Ball to change, and we want to do a lot more, but there's definitely so much more room for growth.
Do you believe that people would be more likely to be interested in sports if it was more accessible to them?
I think so. I think the main thing with this is you're trying to make people aware of the characters, of the storylines. Because once people know who is lining out on a pitch, or if one player comes off and a sub comes on for them, and what the significance of that is, you're going to be way more interested in it. And there are so many great stories behind Irish sportswomen. You know, you look at the likes of Katie McCabe at Arsenal, or Katie Taylor, or even going further back, Sonia O'Sullivan, what she did and her whole storyline. Once people recognise these things, they enjoy watching the sport, they enjoy talking about it way more. So it's a really important role that we have in the media to try and bring these stories to the forefront and basically push them in front of people's faces and say, like, look, this is really fun and really enjoyable once you get to know these things.
Do you believe that women's sports representation has improved over the years, and in what way?
I think so. I think it would be, I would prefer if it had gone a lot further than it has, but I think even the fact that, say, I have a podcast that's about the women's soccer team solely, I don't think that would have existed 5 or 6 years ago in the way that it does now, or have the popularity that it has now. I think that as more and more media companies and television stations get interested in women's sport, we'll see much better representation, and the only place we really can go is up. But we're definitely kind of maybe like a fifth of the way there, and there's a lot more space to grow into.
According to a study conducted by Irish Sports Monitor, only 7% of girls aged 14 to 15 meet recommended physical activity levels. Why do you think this is, and how would you get more girls to get into sport?
I think there's so many barriers for girls when it comes to sport. It's often a world you're told you don't belong in or is not for you. And that really settles in your head, especially when you're that age. And, you know, there's a lot of things changing in your life and you're trying to work out who you are. And someone's saying to you, oh, this is for the boys, it's not for the girls. It settles in you very early on. There's also a lot of physical barriers, like your body's going through a lot of changes at that stage. And I think we could do a lot better educating the people who are coaching kids of that age, educating parents, educating teachers as well, about how they can make sport more accessible for girls, more comfortable space for them to be in, and just understanding that just because they're not boys, it doesn't mean that they don't want to do these things, or because they might have some concerns themselves, that doesn't mean they don't actually want to participate. They just want to participate in a way that's fun for them. So I think that it's about encouragement. I think it's about representation, like we were saying, in the media. The more that girls can see that they can play sport and they can go on to play at a pro level, or they can just go out and enjoy themselves if they want, that will be really crucial to making sure that we have less of a dropout rate than we currently do. And then the other side as well is making sure that the facilities are still there. So, you know, growing up, I remember when I was playing GAA, and if we had to share the pitch with the lads, we would get a third of the pitch and they would get 2/3 for no other reason than they were guys. So I think things like that, making sure that there's proper facilities in place, proper coaches in place, and proper opportunities is also really important, as well as the education side.
According to the same source, 26% of women report verbal abuse while playing sports, while 21% of men report verbal abuse. Do you believe that the fact that women are 5% more likely to experience this has an impact on why sports are currently more played by men than they are by women?
I think it's definitely a factor. One of the greatest myths out there is that women's sport is soft. I mean, some of the scenes I saw on a pitch whenever I was playing were not for the faint-hearted. I think the abuse definitely comes into it. I think the type of abuse as well comes into it. So a lot of the time, the things that would be discouraging to women is mean names, you know, comments about weight or your body, which can be like a very sensitive topic for a lot of people. I think all that sort of stuff definitely comes into it. I mean, playing sport, you're always going to get a certain level of abuse, but when it's already a place that you feel like you don't belong, and then the comments coming at you are also compounding it, it's definitely part of the reason why I think some women don't enjoy playing sport or don't want to get into it in the first place.
And what steps have been taken to ensure that women's sport is like here to stay?
Sport Ireland do quite a lot in this regard. They run really good courses where they try to get more women involved in coaching and making sure that the proper amounts of funding are going into women's sport. I think a lot of what I would see would be from the representation side. So the fact that, you know, Sky plastered the women's football team all over Dublin and the rest of the country ahead of the World Cup last summer, I think when you have a team that's successful like that and is competing at that high level, it is really encouraging because it's really easy to sell it to people as, well, look, if you put some money into this sport, this is what can happen and these are all the great things you can get out the other side of it. I think there's definitely a lot more to be done. I think more research is really important into the things, like the sort of things that you were mentioning there, that maybe discourage women from playing sport, but also the things that are going to encourage them to get into it a little bit more. And also about the way we play sport, because a lot of the research that's there at the moment, or a lot of the way that women are trained or coached, it's all based on men's bodies and how men's bodies move and react to things. Whereas we need to look at it and say, well, okay, just because you think they're smaller or not as fast doesn't mean that they don't deserve the same amount of research and thought put into how can we get the best out of your physique and the best out of your sport.
What steps would you recommend to be taken to ensure a successful future for women's sports?
I think I would say, first and foremost, to people who roll their eyes sometimes when people talk about women's sport, is just put your biases to the side, leave them at the door and have a bit of fun, lighten up a little bit. I think, you know, if it's a sad life to live if you have to go around dampening something that other people enjoy. I think we need definitely more media representation, 100%. I think we need more women in senior roles in sport. So whether that's at board level or in media on TV talking about sport, or whether that's in coaching positions, because that'll all help feed into women feeling more comfortable and feeling like sport is a place for them. And funding. It's always going to be funding for facilities, funding for research, funding to make sure that it's not the girls getting the scrap ends of what the boys already have. I think there's a lot of potential there, and I think there's some really good people working in this sphere, so I am optimistic about the future, but I would always say that while we have come a certain amount of the way, there's still a long way to go.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's a wrap for TY Takeover. Thanks again to all the people who allowed us to interview them, and a special thanks to all of you for listening. This has been brought to you by Kira, Luke, Evine, Olivia, Matilda, Linus, Tom, Kian, our executive producers, Dash, and Jess Kelly. You can listen back to the whole show on newstalk.com.